Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to multifamily industry operations. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with a wonderful guest who's extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing the topic of the multifamily workforce mental health crisis. Joining me today by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran and thought leader for the multifamily industry, Mike Brewer, the Chief Operating Officer of Radco Residential. Welcome, Mike.
Paul, thanks for having me today. Hope you had a Merry Christmas.
Yes, I did. And to all of our listeners, happy holidays. And looking forward to what 2022 brings. Hopefully we'll start to kind of get back to what we, if we can remember what was normal, what normal is, we'll try to get back to that. So, and that kind of brings up, when we're talking about the multifamily workforce mental health crisis, obviously with everything that's been going on around the world, and especially in our country for the last, 18 to 20 months with the pandemic, that has been, I think, what most people would think would be the cause of a mental health crisis for the workforce and multifamily. And I know that's has contributed a tremendous amount, but there's much more to it, and we're going to talk about those things. But let's kind of talk a little bit about COVID and the pandemic and what that's done to the morale and the ability to cope for our frontline folks in the multifamily industry. And I know, Mike, you deal with this on a day-to-day basis, so let me hear your thoughts.
Yeah, and I think you made a real key distinction there in that it's really impacted our frontline team members, likely a little bit more so than, say, a corporate team member who had the ability to just reset at home, set up technology at home, and just move forward with their work. Unlike what was deemed an essential worker, somebody that had to enter into an apartment on a daily basis to do a service request or to be available in the office for questions or concerns that residents had. I mean, all of a sudden we were thrust into a circumstance where people were working from home and they needed goods and services even more so than they did when they had a traditional job that they'd leave the apartment community every day and come home at the end of the day. So I think our frontline workers really took the brunt of the impact of COVID. And I think it, if you sort of extrapolate to, or fast forward to today, it's really kind of played a key role in this thing that we call the Great Resignation, or what I've seen termed as the Great Resignation. I think people are fatigued, obviously, because of the pandemic. But all the mental stress that comes along with the pandemic, be it their own personal health and welfare or by extension their families, friends, et cetera, that have been impacted by the pandemic.
Well, and if you watch the news and listen to some of the stories that are being told, most people, when they think about the mental health crisis, they first think of the healthcare industry because those are the frontline people who are treating and dealing with the day-to-day issues of people who have COVID and the life and death decisions and so forth. But what a lot of people don't realize is in the multifamily industry, these frontline workers are essential workers. And they didn't really have much of a choice. Well, I guess they did have a choice. They could have left the industry. But if they were going to stay in the industry and that was their position, they really had to be on that front line. Tell us a little bit about some of the things you saw play out in your area, in your market, and within Radco.
Yeah, I think some of the things that were most pronounced to me, I mean, certainly as an organization, we put all the the necessary protocols in place, you know, as we understood them, as the CDC and certainly WHO, the WHO, that is, were putting forward protocols. We were putting those in place at our properties, be it personal protections or social distancing or signage and wayfinding and things that helped not only our team members but our customers interact with us in a safe way. But we still had these occasions. I recall this very vividly in my own experience. I was down in Charleston, South Carolina, and walking a property and having a consumer not really follow what you would think would be a protocol that everyone would know about because we were in this global pandemic. But we entered into an apartment. Prior to entering into the apartment, we had put notification out on the property to please make us aware if somebody in your family has COVID or has been exposed to COVID or et cetera, et cetera. And I remember knocking on a door and stepping into an apartment and only learning after the fact did the resident have COVID currently, right? And they're standing in the kitchen, I'm standing in the living room. And it, you know, what you would have thought would have been common, I'm going to stop short of calling it common sense, but it's what it seemed like, would have led that resident to tell us, but they didn't. And so you have these things that you were contending with that were just variables out there in the environment that you don't have a plan for, right, until you're in the moment. And then you have to call an audible and do something. You know, in that case, we stepped out. Unfortunately, no one on our team got sick, but there were, I heard somebody put it this way, and I believe this to be true. In the early innings of this thing, there were a million different questions being asked, and there were a million different answers for those million different questions. We were more or less making it up on the fly, and our organization was no different. We were making it up on the fly. And to the point of the topic today, I think that lent to a tremendous amount of stress because there's not a standard operating procedure for this kind of thing, right? Or at least there wasn't in the early innings of COVID. You kind of had to make it up as the data was coming at you, and sometimes you had to call audibles that were very stressful. At least in the moment, they were very stressful.
Yeah, and from a lot, I mean, that's a great point. A lot of the folks that I spoke with, as we were kind of getting to a sense of stability of dealing with COVID in the multifamily industry, a lot of people told me that one of the biggest issues they had with their teams was the fact that the communication was coming in every day with a different directive. And it's nobody's fault. I mean, no one knew what was, you know, how to react to this or what to do with it. But it was so stressful and so frustrating for people that they were told to do something a certain way. And the next thing you know, from the corporate office, they get a directive saying, no, we're going to do it this way. And that was based on the fact that, you know, the CDC or the, you know, whatever was changing out there as far as what experts were telling people. And that, as you said, that is a tremendous amount of stress.
Yeah, and you think about that. There are a plethora of different personalities that make up this wonderful thing that we call the world. But there are personalities out there in the workplace and in different environments that love structure. They love routine. They don't like change, right? And so if you imagine for a moment that you're one of those individuals that loves rote and routine kind of work and you don't like a lot of disruption and a lot of change in the way you get things done, all of a sudden you have this thing that is introduced into the environment that is nothing but change and nothing but constant change. And you can imagine the level of stress in an individual that can't plan from one minute to the next because of this new variable who loved, you know, prior to that moment, loved rote and routine. That person has an additional amount of stress because now their entire world is rocked by this idea that you can't put structure to pandemics. So I imagine that stress was just even more leveling to a person like that.
Oh God, I would imagine so. And what, just because we're going to end this segment about a minute and a half, just to kind of put a bow on this, as far as COVID and how it has contributed to the stress, what has changed from the beginning to where we are today, as far as what you see?
Well, I think the biggest change is that you now have a lot more information. I think that you have a lot of protocols that have been put in place like social distancing, like your mask wearing, like vaccines, certainly. I think a lot of those things have instilled a little more confidence into the world in terms of being able to get out and operate and do business and certainly interact and be around friends, family, et cetera, which leads to a reduction in stress, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. But I think the biggest thing is vaccines have been introduced, and we know a lot more. And even though we've had some variants since that original COVID strain, we still at least can anticipate what a new variant will do in the world, right? So there's a lot more information at our fingertips today that allows us to make more informed decisions.
No, and probably a lot less fear, I would imagine.
A lot less, yeah. Yes.
All right, well, we are going to leave it here with this segment. We're going to be back right after this short break. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Multifamily properties' water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
We are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of the multifamily workforce mental health crisis. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran and industry thought leader, Mike Brewer, the Chief Operating Officer of Radco Residential. Before we jump back into the conversation, and I do want to remind our listeners, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. So, Mike, in our first segment, we talked about how the pandemic has certainly contributed to stress, especially amongst the frontline workers in the multifamily industry. But let's talk a little bit about, there's always been stress in any industry, but especially in multifamily, you know, prior to the pandemic, and it will be around after the pandemic. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you think are important as far as leadership goes. Leadership is something to be able to recognize that this is something that is an issue, and also, you know, how to put things in place to deal with it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the number one keys going forward for every organization, for every leader in an organization, is to create what is termed psychological safe space. And I think for many years leading up to now, it was sort of frowned upon to talk about mental health in the workplace. In other words, when you come to work, guess what? I've left a nice little coat hook right before you cross the threshold to come in, where you need to take off all your problems, put them on a coat hanger, and leave them there before you come into my workplace, right? Because I don't want to hear about what's going on in your life as it relates to your mental health. For so many years, that's just the way it was. But I think prior to the pandemic, I sort of go back to the advent of the internet and social media specifically, and how people were comparing and contrasting themselves against what are really facades and sort of fake lives on the internet. But that leads to stress, certainly. But you now have this obligation as an organization to set up spaces where people can actually bring their whole self to work. You're not going to hang your problems on the coat hook. It's just not going to happen. You're going to bring those things into the workspace for you, or with you rather, and they're going to manifest themselves in the way of potentially adverse customer interactions or team member interactions or business partner interactions, or certainly if you have investors touring your property, you could have actually impact your investors in a negative way if you're not setting up that space as a leader in an organization. You're probably doing yourself a disservice on a go forward. You got to set up those spaces for people.
So tell me what that looks like as far as how you communicate that to your teams, as well as how do you get their buy-in?
Yeah, I think I'm a big believer in what I call going first, right? And so if I translate that into real world, I personally, this is just disclosure in terms of mental health, I'm on the spectrum, right? Autism spectrum, or otherwise potentially termed Asperger's, right? Mm-hmm. So I have that as a mental health affliction as a leader in an organization. In a space, right, I guess I'm announcing this public, but in my work world, I sit in a room with my senior leaders and others and say, hey, look, I have this thing. Here's how it potentially manifests itself from time to time. If I get in high stress, or I get in high joy, or I get in these other things that are otherwise known as trigger moments for me, I want you to know how I might respond, okay, or I might react. Just so you know ahead of time, not that I'm putting a burden on you to have to contend with that in some way, but I just want you to know that, right? That way, that those individuals know if something like that crops up, they know how to interact with me, or they know if I get up to leave a room, it's just too high stress, I have to go pause for a second, then I can come back to the room. But going first, I've given others the permission to come forward if they feel comfortable in doing so, right? And I think the buy-in piece of that is in that there's an authenticity about me going first, right? The person in the organization who sits in the seat that I do, if you're willing to do that and you're being vulnerable and you're being authentic about it, then I feel more psychologically safe to do that myself. And then the downstream impact of that is that other team members, be it regional managers or property managers, maintenance supervisors, et cetera, then fill this space by kind of the going first philosophy.
If you don't mind me asking, how difficult was it for you to go first?
You know, I would say without the probably 10 or 12 years worth of counseling and therapy that I've had, contending with that, that would have been an impossible task for me. But I think I really set the stage for myself, along with the help of some tremendous professionals in my life, coaches, mentors, and counselors, to get me ready for a moment like that, or priming myself for a moment like that. So I guess the specific answer to your question is not difficult, but certainly difficult if you take the 10 years leading up to that moment in time into account.
So once you have the buy-in and people start to feel comfortable, what do you see happening? How does it develop?
I think the biggest way that it develops is this is an intentional piece that I think any organization and any leader has to put in place first. You have to promote this thing that I call courageous conversations in moments of truth. And the way first you have to teach and train on that. In other words, when you feel emotionally loaded, right? When you feel that pit in your stomach, or the fast heartbeat, or sweaty palm, sweaty brow, whatever that tell is for you on a physical basis with your body, that is the precise moment that you need to address a concern, right? And that's the moment of truth. So courageous conversation, moment of truth, the courageous conversation piece would be, despite feeling the way that you feel, because that stress, right, that's cortisol going off on your body, and that is stress. telling you your body is either wants to fight or it wants to fly, right? But in that moment, if you can lean in and actually participate in a conversation, even though your voice might crack or you might stutter, whatever your little tick in your body is, if you can lean into that, it's just like riding a bike. First couple of times that you do it, you're going to fall off, you're going to skin your knees, you're going to skin your elbows, but if you pick that bike up and you start to ride it again, you're going to get better and better and better at those courageous conversations in those moments of truth. And I think you teach your body how to de-stress in a stressful moment by just stepping into the stress. And teaching people how to do that is really step one, helping them get comfortable with actually having a conversation in a stressful moment.
All right. Well, we got about 3 minutes left. I want to ask you, because a lot of the stress, I mean, you gave such a great mental picture and analogy of leaving your issues on the coat hanger by the door, don't bring them into the office. But what about the stress that's created in the office? How do you deal with that as far as getting the team members to at least talk about what's going on and then accepting responsibility for finding a solution?
Yeah, I think this is a key topic, right, in that a lot of times we as workmates in a work environment, we become very intimate with one another, and I mean intimate in the right sense, right? There are certainly lines you can cross in terms of intimacy, but you become very intimate, and so you become very comfortable with one another. And in that comfort, you sometimes say things or take on tones that aren't conducive to good relationship and good work environments, right? And so you could not by any sort of fault of your own or not knowingly set off other people. And I think the key in those situations is the person receiving information that feels hurt by it, right, has to be willing to stand up and say, hey, I don't really like the way that came across, or hey, here's the story. This is one of my favorite things. Here's the story I'm telling myself about what you just said. I'm telling myself that you're a real jerk because you said X. Can you help me walk through that? And that person will, 99 times out of 100, say, you know what? I'm so sorry. That's not what I was doing. And let's talk that through. Help me understand why it impacted you the way that I did, way that it did. But helping team members facilitate those types of conversations and giving them keywords and key language to or kind of a vocabulary to work through when they're in those emotionally loaded situations is a key for organizations to help with that kind of thing.
That is this is a very important part of what we're discussing today. And we have to take a break right now, but I want to jump back on one thing on this when we get back. We're gonna take this break. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. for a free analysis of your property. That's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
We are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters. And today we're discussing the topic of the multifamily workforce mental health crisis. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran and multifamily industry thought leader, Mike Brewer, the Chief Operating Officer of Radco Residential. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. eConserve, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S., Rev, the leasing management company. Rev is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties. And CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Mike, we talked a little bit about, in the last segment, about how to get conversations started and the importance of being able to speak and talk about what is a concern or what's bothering somebody. But one thing I just wanted to ask you before we move on is, what about if that conversation was taking place with a subordinate to a supervisor, to someone up the food chain from where they are? How to create an environment where they have the comfort level that there's not going to be repercussions for being able to say what they want to say?
Definitely. I think this is a cultural thing that starts at the top. And just by way of example, at Radco, back in, let's say it was the middle of summer 2020, we read a book called Candid Conversations, I think Kim Scott is the author. And the overarching thesis in that book is having candid conversations up and down the stream, if you will. So managing up or managing down. And I think if you've not taken the time as an organization to actually make that a value or part of your culture, part of your learning culture, it becomes very hard for a subordinate to actually, let's call it, hold their superior accountable. I think when you've taken the time to actually put that infrastructure in place by learning about it, teaching, training, by way of specific example, the way that plays out at Radco, when we have a post-mortem meeting, we walk in the room, and one of the very first things that I say when we sit down to have a meeting is, there are no stripes in this room. No one has a title. There are no egos. We put those all outside the door. So I am subject to, meaning Mike is subject to, just as much as anyone else in the room is subject to, and subject to meaning criticism, so that we can make our system or our process even better. But we are very intentional about creating those moments where people speak up and down without that sort of fear of any repercussions happening.
And how have you seen it play out does everybody get comfortable with that?
I would tell, okay, so in the very early innings of trying to create that environment, it's slow, right? There certainly are people who are very hesitant about that sort of thing, but you inevitably, there is a person in an organization, even if they're doing it out of pure challenge to what you just said, will speak up and will say something. And so it's kind of the go first again. The first time that somebody challenged me in a room and made me feel uncomfortable about something that I did or said or whatever, I think that gave everyone else license to do the same. And certainly there are some ground rules, right? You can't attack people's characters. You have to speak to the subject, not to a person's behavior, personality, etc. Those are conversations for other rooms at other times. But I've seen it play out very well for us over the course of the last 18 months. There are a lot more candid conversations in our organization than there used to be.
That's great. Well, I just was curious about that. Let's move on to, because we've been talking about the stress that causes the mental health crisis. What are some of the tips that you can tell our listeners about that you believe would be helpful to manage stress?
Oh, I got to tell you, the number one thing for me is sleep. Many years ago, I read an article from Harvard Health that, you know, 50-80% of their patients in a typical psychiatric practice have issues with sleep versus like whatever 10-15% of the population at large. Sleep is the key to everything, in my opinion, in terms of be it mental health, be it stress, be it good diet. Everything sort of keys off of good sleep. So getting yourself in a good routine, going to bed every night, if possible, at the exact same time. But the bigger key to sleep is waking up at the exact same time every single morning, despite how many hours you might get the night before. So even though you try to go to bed at the same time, if you happen to throw that off because of the holidays and you go to some social activity and you're out until 2 o'clock in the morning and your wake up time is 5, you still get up at 5.
Yeah.
That's a key. But sleep is huge in managing stress.
What other things have you personally used or suggested to employees that they use?
Yeah, so one of the other things for me, I started this practice, I'm going to say it was 2008 or 2009, and I'm certainly probably off on the date, but I subscribed to an app called Headspace. Meditation is the answer, mm-hmm. but subscribe to an app called Headspace, which gave me all kinds of routines as it relates to meditation. In the beginning, I started out with like 5 minutes of meditation. So when I'd get up in the morning, I would hydrate, and then I would sit down and have 5 minutes of emptying the mind, so to speak, of just intentional sitting still and processing mentally, right? In that practice of meditation, I will tell you, I ended up getting upwards of about an hour's worth of meditation on a daily basis in one setting before I scaled that back to like 20 minutes. But going through that entire process, I can't tell you how it impacted my stress in the kind of moment of truth. Meaning, prior to doing meditation, I had very reactionary responses to stress, right? So if some kind of stimulus happened in my environment, I would just react to it based on these scripts that I have, you know, dating back to the time I was born. But after meditation and after going through a year's worth of practice of that, anytime that some trigger would happen in my environment, my first sort of response to that was just pause. I would look at it, I would put pure definition to whatever it was, and then I would respond accordingly. It was the wildest thing that I saw change over time. So one of the things I recommend to my, especially team members who sort of are anxious, what appears to be anxious all the time or stressed all the time is, hey, look, this is gonna seem like a very long road, but download an app and start meditation. Start it today and just do 5 minutes and do that for the next 21 days and let's talk again after that.
Wow.
And I can't tell you the impact that has on team members.
Obviously, things like deep breathing, physical exercise, nutrition, those are all important in managing stress. And we have about 3 minutes left, but I wanted to kind of get your opinion on how does social media affect stress?
Oh, wow. I think certainly COVID is a crisis. It's been a crisis. It continues to be a crisis, and it's something that we'll probably have to contend with from now until the end of time. Social media, in my opinion, and believe me, I'm a huge advocate. I was a very huge advocate and practitioner of social media in the early innings, you know, dating all the way back to very early email applications, which I consider social media.
Yeah.
But I love it because there, you know, it really did connect the world. And in the early innings, I think it connected the world in a way that was really fruitful because, you know, you were running into people you hadn't run into in a very long time. You were reconnecting with friends, family, loved ones, right? But then it took on a completely different dynamic in that it became a space where people started to compare and contrast these sort of best lives. And the reality of those best lives are just facades in many cases. People just put these kind of the highlight reel of their life out on social media, and then other people are comparing themselves to that, and they're always trying to one-up and one-up and one-up. And I just think that entire thing is an incredible spiral to the downside and the depths of depression, certainly suicidal tendencies, all these mental health issues that we're seeing play through the world today. I think you can absolutely sort of trace back to social media, and not only social media, but even corporate media. When you turn on the television at night and you're watching the news and you just get dialed into what is a curated experience for you, mm-hmm. specifically more so on the social side, but it's done nothing but hinder our society at large. I think it's not been a good thing.
No, I happen to agree with that, and I know that it's really somewhat addictive for people. It's very difficult for them to not pick their phone up and take a look at it, you know, even in the middle of a conversation you're having with them. So that's something that, you know, hopefully there'll be someone who comes up with a way to help reduce stress by eliminating that from their people's lives every second of the day. But we're going to break it here. We're going to be back with our final segment of this episode right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of the multifamily workforce mental health crisis. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran and thought leader for the industry, Mike Brewer, the Chief Operating Officer of Radco Residential. Mike, you know, we've talked a lot in these previous segments about specifics, but let's talk about what can a company do, a multifamily company do, to help make things better for employees, less stressful for employees, and to maybe lessen this crisis, realizing that things like the pandemic are always going to be out there. So what kind of things do you see that companies can do?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think that most organizations have things like employee assistance programs, or sometimes otherwise known as EAPs. And I think making sure that you're continually promoting those programs, because they're very, very useful to team members. I think other things you can do, I certainly think flexible work, more time off for people. I think that's something you're going to see pronounce itself more so in the multifamily space on a go forward. Compressing work weeks, you know, 4-day work weeks instead of five, things like that. I think sort of above all of that, make sure that you're normalizing mental illness in your organization. In other words, going back to that psychologically safe environment conversation that we were having earlier, make sure that people know that it is okay. Doesn't mean you have to announce that in a team meeting. It means that, hey, can take your supervisor aside and just let them know you've got something that's ailing you, and this is how it presents, and I just want you to know that. So if something happens, you're at least aware of what I'm contending with, and make that okay. I think some of the really cool things that I've seen companies doing that I've read about recently, shutting down after hours. This is something that I threaten our team members with. I use the word threat lightly, but I threaten our team members with when they go on vacation that I'm going to shut down their access so that they can't access email or any kind of work-related activity while they're out. And I can't tell you how many people just, they don't like that idea, and they certainly give me their two cents about it. But there are companies out there in the world. I think Volkswagen is one that comes to mind, where they literally do shut you down from like 6 o'clock at night until 7 o'clock in the morning. They just shut down the internal servers and you can't get email. And so it's sort of this forced downtime or forced time for you to go and participate with your family or your friends or your loved ones. I think that's a really cool idea because it sort of brings to mind this thing I've heard called the French fry theory, right? You can always eat one more French fry. You can always do one more email. And if you have access to it, you are going to do it. So taking away that access is a very cool thing. I think making mental health a key performance indicator. I know we have a pay for performance model at Radco. And one of the things that we're talking about right now are KPIs for 2022. Actually lacing in a personal wellness KPI. One of the examples that I've seen recently is that somebody wants to do meditation 7 days a week. You make that your own personal KPI, and your bonus gets attached to your playing out the 7 days a week of meditation, right? So if you are actually intentional about making that part of your workflow, even though it's a personal activity, I think that's a huge thing and could go a long way for an organization. I also think supporting parents, companies can support parents. Certainly a lot of children have been learning school from home in some cases. I think if Omicron continues to make its way through the world, and it will, we could see some of that virtual learning going back into effect, and certainly organizations, to the extent that they can, helping parents with that is a huge deal, whatever that might look like. I think making mental health a core value in your organization. You know, we have four core values at Radco, but maybe adding on for us something around the topic of mental health will be something that we do in 22 or 23. That way it is front and center all the time and a part of the conversation. I certainly think that creating expectations, maybe resetting expectations as it relates to responding to things in, you know, a millisecond. I think that there are people who take great pride in responding to emails swiftly, right? Or any other communication mechanism that we have in organizations today. There are people who take great pride in responding to you within 5 seconds. And I think resetting expectations, maybe even penalizing somebody their response in 5 seconds as opposed to 5 minutes, might go a long way in reducing a lot of stress.
And so when you are talking about, I want to jump back to the core value situation. You said Radco has four core values. How is that communicated and accepted by your teams? And then when you add one, how do you make that announcement so that everybody, again, buys in?
Yeah, definitely. Our core values are something that we're super proud of, and we've been promoting in everything that we do, from sourcing and onboarding, hiring and onboarding, and all through one's employee life cycle. We are constantly promoting our four core values, be it through our internal communication mechanisms or our external social media offerings. We just overly promote and overly communicate. I heard a guy say one time, he was the CEO, he said, the key to business is you pick a few core values and you repeat them ad nauseum. And to the point where when you get sick of hearing yourself talk about the core values in your organization, only then are you starting to really communicate those core values in your organization. And so we've done that. I think if we were to introduce a mental health value in 2022, we would overly promote it, overly communicate it, and we would, in each time that we saw that core value play out in the way of real human experience in our company, we just tell stories, right? Every story that is created as a function of the values in our organization gets repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated. And by repetition, those core values start to sort of imbue themselves in people's heads, and then they come out as sort of muscle memory when you're serving the customer or serving a team member or serving a business partner.
Yeah, that's great. One other thing, we've got about 2.5 minutes left before I want to transition to something else with you, but what about creating the opportunity for employees to get to know each other better? Does that help relieve stress?
I love this. So there's a company called Stored, and actually the person, Sharon Coffin, who helped us put together show notes for today, her I believe it is her daughter that works for this company called Stored. And at Stored, they use Slack, which is an internal communication mechanism, much like Teams or others, like it, where the system actually force sets appointments for team members who don't know each other to actually jump on a call for like 15 minutes just to get to know each other, just to make a connection. So it's cross-departmentalism, right? So you may work in accounting and I may work in HR, and all of a sudden Slack sets up a 15-minute appointment for us, and we just get on and we just talk about life, introduce ourselves to each other, and we just talk. And get to know each other. And I do think that to the extent that you can create relationship and friendship within an organization on topics that are not work topics, yes, that goes a long way in reducing stress, because you're no longer are you coming to a place where you're just checking in and performing a task and then going home at the end of the day, but you're coming to a place where you create a relationship through those workflows. And there's another company I'll mention quickly, Music Grotto, where they actually have lunch roulette, where same internal mechanism or some mechanism sets up these sort of randomly assigned lunches with people, where you go and you have lunch, the company pays for the lunch, and you spend an hour with someone that you wouldn't otherwise spend time with, and just getting to know one another. And I certainly think that, again, to the points that we just made, that goes a long way in reducing stress.
About 30 seconds left before we transition. I know you're big on communication with your teams and having meetings. Anything people can do to kind of shake that up a little bit?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So at Radco, we had this thing called Daily Huddles, something we put in place about 3 years ago. So every single day, you participate in two daily huddles. It's basically your supervisor. So I have a daily huddle with my direct reports, and then those direct reports have daily huddles with their direct reports, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody in the company does this every single day. But taking that, instead of having it on Teams or even sitting in a building, maybe you go outside and you have your daily huddle outside instead of inside. But just mixing things up, I think adding variety to things instead of letting them become rote and routine would certainly go a long way in reducing stress.
All right. Well, we're going to transition from our topic. We covered a lot of ground there, all great information. But I do want to talk with you a little bit about Radco. What's going on with Radco? I happened to read recently that it was named as one of the best places to work in 2022. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, we were we're very proud of our team. The Reader's Digest version of our story is that, gee whiz, less than 4 years ago, plus minus, we were 83 properties, some almost 30,000 units spread across 14 cities, or 9 states and 14 cities. And today we're about 2,000 units. So you can imagine the downsizing that happened as a result of what we consider, you know, just really good multifamily pricing right now. We sold into that. Our organization didn't go through a reorg. It went through a complete downsizing, which brought a lot of stress along with it. But I was really proud of the team members that weathered the storm, who went through that experience. I'm very proud of the team members that are not with us anymore. I think all of them landed somewhere in the multifamily space in Atlanta and other cities. We're very proud of them for helping us along the way. But this year we participated in the Best Places to Work Multifamily. I think we ended up number 14 on the list. And so despite all of the adversity that's gone on in our company, we were able to place well in that. I'm very proud of our team members for participating in that and showing up every day and believing in what we're doing.
Fantastic. We've got about 25 seconds left. Let our listeners know if they wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way to do that? And then a quick give them a quick idea about Multifamily Collective.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thank you for that. So mbrewer@radco.us is my email, or you can find me on LinkedIn, or if you just Google my name and apartments or multifamily, I'm on all the social channels. Multifamily Collective is a labor of love. That's something I've been writing blog posts about the multifamily space since 2005, 2006. I've got some 2,000 multifamily articles out there on a multifamilycollective.com. As of late, I took a cue from Paul Marx, the great Paul Marx, and started an interview series. In fact, you were one of my guests, and I thank you for that. We started interviewing multifamily individuals, leaders in the space, and posting those out onto LinkedIn every Tuesday. And, have a lot of fun with that, but it's been a labor of love for a very long bit of time.
Yeah, check it out. It's multifamilycollective.com. Is that the way to find it?
Yes, sir.
All right. Fantastic. Well, Mike, thank you so much for being here. We've got to break it here. I want to let our listeners know that we're going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.